And we are going to remember one of the most dramatic points in Christian history. Jesus' last night on the earth before his crucifixion and resurrection. And this story, if you want to look it up, it begins in Luke 22:7. And I am telling the story combined out of all of the Gospels. So there's different parts pulled out of the different Gospels. But you can look them up and find the different, each disciple is dressed as something else. And so you can see all of them. But it was Passover time. And the city was full of people. And the disciples worried that they wouldn't be able to find a place to hold their Passover meal together. And you can imagine, I was looking at pictures and I couldn't find one that I really liked, but Passover in Jerusalem. One of the things you have to keep in mind is that people believed at that time. Remember, those of you in the Bible study will recall that the tabernacle, before they moved into Jerusalem, took Jerusalem and built the temple, the tabernacle, people lived right around it. And that was the place where the presence of God came down. And you can visually see it. Remember, we talked about this. You can visually see the presence of God fall down on the tabernacle. And the other priests knew that they could not go into the place, other than Aaron and his sons, they couldn't go into the place at that time when the presence of God had fallen down on it. And so, the way the temple was in Jerusalem, the people believed that the further away you were from the temple, the further away you were from God. And the only place that you could have a Passover sacrifice was at the temple. And so people, Jews, were coming from all over the world. As far away as Ethiopia, Africa, different parts of Africa, all through Europe, they were all coming to Jerusalem just for this time. And so the city would have been completely packed with people. And the disciples, you know, it's kind of like me here at the church. We've had some people come, hey, what can you do? You know, we need to set up for this. And I say, I don't really worry about that stuff. I have people that take care of all that stuff. I just don't even think much about it. And that's the way Jesus was. First of all, he didn't worry about stuff, did he? Period. Because he was God. But second of all, he had people to take care of it. And the disciples, they hadn't done this yet, and they were worried. Man, all these people, and we're not going to be able to find a place to have our meal together. But just as it is in our own lives, they worried for no reason. Did you know, I don't remember the exact statistic, but they talked about worrying, and they said, above 90% of all the things that we worry about never happen. Never happen. And in this case, the disciples were worried, and they didn't have any reason to, because God had already prepared a place. And so Jesus told them what to do. He told Peter and John, hey, you go out, and you go to the front. He told them exactly what to do. And just as he had with the donkey and the colt when he entered Jerusalem, everything was just as he told them it would be. I found this to be interesting. Tradition holds that the cenacle, this place right here, is where what we call the upper room, where Jesus and his disciples shared their Passover meal together. Incidentally, it would have also been, it was the same room where they were when Jesus first appeared to them after he had resurrected. So this is a big room, right? Even by our standards, that's a big room. And so they held their Passover meal together there. And there's all sorts of different ideas about who owned it. Some people believe that Nicodemus owned it. Others believe that Jesus' mother, Mary, owned it. And others say that it was Mark's mother. You remember Mark that wrote the book of Mark? He was just a boy at the time. But they believe that she may have owned it. Whoever owned it, it's interesting that that room is directly above the tomb of David. Isn't that amazing? In fact, that room is constantly being argued about who owns it. Because the Jews don't really care about it, other than the fact that it's above King David. And so they're constantly arguing about that. But whoever owned it, it was waiting there for this very night. And in all likelihood, there's all sorts of conjecture, so-and-so was there. Only the 12 disciples, probably, that Jesus had called were in attendance at his last Passover meal. And the disciples were lounging around the table. Now, I know moms and dads are thinking, we don't lounge. We get to sit up straight at the table, right? But no, they really were lounging. The word that's used in the Bible is reclining. They recline. Because, see, generally, the table was really low. And see how this has pretty big chairs. But in reality, they were probably sitting on cushions and little couches. And they were leaning back and laying against each other and having a good time at this Passover meal. And, you know, it's like I said, it would be really low to the ground. These cushions would be on the ground. If you look at some of the Arab life, even in today, they sit on much the same thing today. But it's really low to the ground. And I know what the kids are saying. You know, the kids are thinking, wow, that'd be cool. We could just lay at the dinner table, right? Whereas folks like me, a little bit older, are thinking, I'm going to need somebody to help get me out. But be that as it may, they were lounging around the table. Now I want you to imagine again. I asked you to do this on Sunday, and I think I was a reader. How many of you are readers? I was a reader from the time I was very small. I read science fiction and all that kind of stuff. And I am really good at just putting myself in that place. And that's kind of what you need to do here. Imagine that you're one of those disciples. Probably not Judas. And you're one of the disciples. And this is an important event because it's the Passover meal. But it feels somehow different this time. You know, Jesus has been acting a little differently these past few days. What's going on with him? You might be wondering. Things are quieter than normal for this festive meal. And the room feels heavy. There's a different spirit present here, and you can almost feel it pressing down on you. You try to ignore it by passing conversation with another one of the disciples as you lounge there by the meal that is spread before you, waiting for Jesus to bless. And Paul, we're going to have the service come forward. We're going to have communion together at this time. As the servers come to pass the elements of the Lord's Supper, the first thing I would ask you, the Apostle Paul says, to make sure that your heart is right with God when you remember this event and you have communion. And the other thing that I would ask you is that you think back, especially tonight, but that you really think back to that night as they were sharing their meal together. But as they were finishing their meal, Jesus told them that a betrayer was among them. This would have been a major shock to them, because he had been trying to prepare them for the crucifixion, and they still weren't getting that. But he hadn't told them that there was a betrayer. And so the first thing they did was say, who is it? Is it you? Is it you? And then they jump from who's the betrayer to who do you think is the greatest among us? Isn't that like so many? Oh man. You know, I did all this for Jesus. And of course, John was over there laying all over Jesus. Bible says he was laying on Jesus, on his shoulder. And it says that he was the beloved one, that Jesus loved him. He was probably the youngest. And he was leaning over on Jesus, and they were all saying, oh, who's the greatest? And Jesus was explaining, if you're going to be the greatest, you need to serve. And he was trying to explain to them that things in the kingdom of heaven don't work the way they do on Wall Street. He didn't have Wall Street, but it was the same thing. He was trying to tell them, it's not like the Pharisees do it. You serve. And he had showed that by washing their feet before they came in. But he singled out Judas and told him to go quickly to do that which he had conspired to do. And Jesus left in anger, and the Bible said Satan was allowed to enter him. Just as we're going to do in a few moments before we leave here, Jesus and his disciples sang a hymn together. How many of you knew that they sang a hymn together? They sang a hymn together. Now, I've got to tell you, my own imagination fills this hymn with amazing grace. But I do know there wasn't written yet. So likely it was a hymn about the Passover. What a true rabbi Jesus was. Rabbi, that they called him many times in the Bible, means teacher. And Jesus continued to teach, even on this very night. He not only warned them that hard times were coming, but he also encouraged them that no matter what came their way, he was going to be with them always. Same thing I tried to tell you. It's a tough time we're living in, and getting tougher for Christians, more so in other places. But you're never alone. And he told them he was going to prepare a place for them, just as he has for you and for me. And then he told them they were going to be given another advocate, the Holy Spirit. And he said that when the Holy Spirit comes, you will be taught from within. He will teach you, and I will be with you always. After he finished teaching, they had gotten up and they'd gone to the Mount of Olives, and all the disciples were there and he was teaching. But after he finished teaching, he asked Peter and John to follow him a little further. This is the picture of the Garden of Gethsemane. Pretty, isn't it? Olive trees. Beautiful. Those are olive trees. But then Jesus left the other disciples. It was nighttime. And they were falling asleep. And Jesus took Peter and John, and he said, come with me a little further. You know, sometimes God asks us to go a little further. And this is what he asked Peter and John. Come a little further with me. And so they went on a little ways, and then they sat down by a tree.
Jesus told them, stay here and pray while I go off to pray. And so Jesus went along to pray. It was an agonizing time for Jesus. I don't think there's any way for us to understand how agonizing this would be. He knew exactly what was coming and must have dreaded just as you or I would if we knew something horrendous was about to happen to us. A friend of mine had epilepsy, and it was what they call a really one of the worst kinds of epilepsy. He would just immediately stand there and go blank, or sit there, and he would go blank. Nothing would be happening. He would go blank. But he said he would get these what they called auras, and he said it felt like if you were tied to a chair and you knew there was a monster behind you and it was coming towards you. And that's what it felt like. And you knew that attack was coming and there was nothing you could do about it. And that must have been something similar to what Jesus must have felt during this time. Something was horrible that no other person on this earth had ever been had to be put through was coming. He was concerned for his disciples too. It wasn't just him. I mean, he prayed for the disciples. He told Peter that Satan was asking that they be sifted like wheat. He knew they were going to be attacked. And so he prayed for his disciples that they would stay on course. And then he prayed for you. Prayed for me. He said, and Father, for all those who believe in me, on my name, keep them safe. And so, he knew how far things were going to get for them. He knew the disciples' unbelief. He knew that they wanted to believe that he was who he said he was. But they had their own nagging doubts and fears, and I know none of you are like that, but sometimes I have doubts, and I have fears. And Jesus prayed for them. In fact, he went back to check. During his agonizing times, he got up and went back to check on Peter and John, and they were asleep. And he said, their spirit was willing, but their flesh was weak. Isn't that true of us? And then he went back to pray more. He was in such anguish that he sweat great drops of blood. And the medical term for that is hematidrosis. Yes, there's actually a medical term for it. The blood vessels around the sweat glands burst, causing sweat to contain blood. And this only happens in extreme anguish. And it's very rare. And finally, during this time, Jesus cried out to his Father, Father, if it be your will, let this cup pass from me. And then he uttered those words that anyone who truly wants to follow Christ must utter in some fashion. Not my will, but yours be done. See, the choice was his. Even in all his anguish, I think almost adding to that anguish of knowing what's to come, he also knew that he had but to speak one word, and it would all be over. When I was young, we used to sing a song called He Could Have Called 10,000 Angels. But he died alone for you and me. As as his resolve says, he got up and he woke Peter and John and the rest of the disciples. Just as Judas showed up with the temple guards and the Pharisees. And as they stepped up to arrest Jesus, Peter, I just love Peter. Mister, think. No, I don't think first. Wait a minute. I'm going to act first or speak first. Then I'm going to think about something afterwards. And Peter is an act first kind of guy. And he gets his sword and he lops off the ear of the high priest's servant. And Jesus is there. Oh, my bad. Just picks it up and puts it back on. Not a problem for him. Then they led him off to be falsely accused, beaten, and to die. As we have traveled back through time together, I ask you to imagine yourself there. In a way, you were there. Because it was your sin that put it there. It was my sin that put it there. I was there. We were all there because it is our sin that Jesus died for, past, present,